From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Melissa Block.
And I'm Michelle Norris. 10 years ago, the people of Rwanda suffered one of the worst genocides of the 20th century. On April 6, 1994, the country's president was assassinated. Within 24 hours, extremists from Rwanda's Hutu majority had launched a plan to exterminate the minority Tutsi. Over the next 100 days, more than 800,000 Tutsis and moderate Hutus were killed. A decade later, the country is slowly trying to memorialize the genocide and at the same time move past it. NPR's Jason Bobian reports.
Rwanda is a beautiful country. Its steep green hills roll across a tiny patch of Central Africa. The rich soil is ideal for growing coffee and tea. But this land is also littered with mass graves. As the 10th anniversary of the Rwandan genocide approaches, many of the massacre sites are being turned into memorials. One of them is in what used to be a technical school in Gikongoro in the south of the country. Marie-José Mfura's parents were among the local Tutsis who sought refuge at the school in the early days of the genocide. Hutu militiamen led by local government officials surrounded the school, Mfura says, and over the course of 2 days killed, by some estimates, 50,000 people. As part of the memorial at Gikongoro, some of the 27,000 corpses exhumed from the site have been laid out in the classrooms where they presumably were killed. The rooms are eerily silent, but the dead appear to be screaming, their jaws locked open, their legs pulled towards their chests, arms raised as if trying to fend off another blow from a machete. Mfura says the classrooms filled with bodies are an illustration of the carnage that took place here.
Some people do not want to see that, but some are saying that genocide didn't happen. We are trying to show the whole world that genocide really happened in this country.
Mfura says she survived the killing because some Hutu friends hid her in their house, but she lost most of her family.
My husband was killed, and my baby received a blow on the head, and he's been completely paralyzed.
She drags two fingers down her forehead, over her nose, and slowly down her chest, illustrating the path of the paralysis through her child's body. Mfura closes the door to the classrooms without looking in. On April 6th of 1994, President Juvenal Habyarimana, who was a Hutu, was flying home to Rwanda. His plane was shot down as it approached Kigali Airport. The cause of the crash has never been fully investigated, but within hours, some say minutes, of the plane crash, the genocide began. Hutu militias set up roadblocks across Kigali and began slaughtering Tutsis. Radio broadcasts blamed Tutsis for the assassination and called on Hutus to exterminate the cockroaches. In December of last year, two of the leaders of this radio station were found guilty by a UN war crimes tribunal of genocide and crimes against humanity. During colonial times, ethnic identity in Rwanda was heightened and exploited by Europeans. The colonialists viewed the slender, thin-nosed Tutsis as more refined than the short, round-faced Hutus. Under the European stereotypes, Tutsis were the attractive, intelligent class, suited for jobs as managers, and Hutus were the gruff peasants. But the divide between the two groups was never so clear-cut. Hutus and Tutsis spoke the same language, lived in the same villages, worshipped in the same churches, and regularly intermarried. Rwandans themselves say it's impossible to tell a Hutu from a Tutsi on the street. By the time of the genocide, however, everyone in Rwanda carried an ID card identifying themselves as either Hutu or Tutsi. And once the killing began, the Tutsi card served as death warrants. Tens of thousands of people are in prison across Rwanda accused of participating in the genocide. Most are still awaiting trial. Of the 3,400 prisoners accused of genocide at Kigali Central Prison, 400 have been found guilty. The Kigali Central Prison is a crumbling red brick building built by the Belgians in 1930. Faux turrets decorate its corners. Broken glass bottles protrude from the top of its walls. But there's no need to scale the walls of this prison. The front door is open. Inmates in bright pink uniforms mingle in the courtyard with visitors who've brought them food. Prison officials say the accused genocidaires don't try to escape because they'd be lynched if they ran away. Maria Mukamakwiye has been in the Kigali Central Prison for 9 years. She admits she killed 5 people on the first full day of the genocide.
My husband was the leader of the hunters. My husband was a leader of the Interahamwe in our neighborhood.
Since 1993, she'd been training with her husband to hunt, in her words, enemies of the state. The night the president's plane crashed, she says, a member of parliament came to their house, gave them 10 guns and a bag of grenades, and said it was time to carry out the plan.
The family next door, they were newlyweds, and we shot the whole family.
Rwanda is an extremely orderly society. The capital, Kigali, now is considered quite safe. There's very little violent street crime. And unlike any other African city, everyone here fastens their seatbelts. Mukamakwiwe and others at the prison say they killed because that's what they were told to do. Some in the prison still deny that what occurred in 1994 was genocide. They say that there was a war between the Hutu-dominated Rwandan government and Tutsi rebels based in Uganda, and in the process, a lot of people got killed. But most Rwandans acknowledge their horrific history. The government is trying to expedite the backlog of genocide trials by sending lower-level genocidaires before traditional village-based courts. And many people, including the president, who was a leader of the Tutsi rebels, refused to talk about ethnicity, choosing instead to speak of themselves simply as Rwandese. Jason Beaubien, NPR News.